Welcome to the Watson Weekly. I'm your host, Rick Watson.
Hey, it's Jess Lisewski. We're back.
Can't get rid of us.
Oh, no.
Today's show is a banger. We have a few fun stories. First, the World Cup. The tourists are going viral for visits to Buc-ee's and Walmart. Could brand deals follow? Second, OpenAI tells Khan that we are an ad platform. And finally, our mega story, Shopify Editions, Spring 26. Shopify wants your catalog. But first, if you don't know about our newsletter, check it out. It's a simple website. You could probably guess it. WatsonWeekly.com. Go on there. Subscribe. Help us out.
Tell your friends. Don't want to miss this.
Yeah, your enemies too.
That's right. We're frenemies. We welcome all types. Well, Rick, I'm going to hit us off with our first story, which the World Cup tourists are going viral for their first visits to Buc-ee's, Walmart. Are these brand deals going to turn into something bigger as a result? So here's the thing to catch you up. The 2026 World Cup is upon us, and it has been years in the making. It's in the U.S., Canada, Mexico this summer. We've got an international stage flooding to the States. And if you have missed this on Instagram, I don't know what you're doing with your life, because it is everywhere. It's just blown up. While many of the Americans are trying to showcase their best life in Spain or France or Italy, you know, I just came off my Spanish trip, and showing all the sights. That's right. Little hair clip. We've got all the Europeans coming over to the U.S. sharing the main tourist destinations that you see, which are Buc-ee's, Waffle House, Walmart, Yeehaw! Tractor Supply, I think, was even in the mix. And, you know, there are some real standouts here, Rick. They're discovering things like Big Gulp. They're discovering tacos, pizza, and the glorious condiment of it all, ranch dressing.
Ranch dressing is underrated, people.
It's having its moment. It's, you know, what we've discovered and loved for years. You can make anything taste better with ranch. Our European friends seem to cannot get enough of it. And you're seeing these bottles lining up at TSA. But really, the story here is, you know, are there brand deals that are going to follow? And we've actually seen a couple of examples of this. So Scottish creator Sean Alexander has got 50,000 Instagram followers.
That's a fun one. He picked up like tens of thousands of followers just in a couple of days. Now his main job is his side hustle.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, he had like his marketing consultancy job, which is kind of off to the side here as he's getting sponsored by Sonic.
Yes.
And some players are doing it too. So Spain's Lamine Yamal got spotted at like shopping in a Georgia Walmart. So do you think that, Rick, this is a trend that's catching on, or will this flame out, you know, as quickly as the summer ends?
It's going to flame out quickly. I mean, we're having a moment. And I mean, this is almost like the Barbenheimer summer. Like usually it's summer. Something happens in the summer. I don't know what it is. People come like the freaks come out or something. We have J.J. Watt getting involved. You've seen some of that stuff.
That's right. He's helping out his friend Freddie, his new friend.
I love it. Yeah. Freddie is their besties.
So. Right. Yeah. So, you know, I think the interesting thing is, are we going to find some brands getting a halo effect? You know, Buc-ee's is actually not in a lot of the places that the host cities are. They're in these kind of like random, you know, off 95, like off the beaten path. You know, Walmart maybe has a bigger moment. Is it more the halo effect of all the Americans following this, more so than just a flash in the pan, people like able to capitalize this on a couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think it's going to be hard for us to turn this into a sustainable effort. What is sustainable is just the idea. I mean, influencer obviously have been around for a while, or obviously here to stay, catching these cultural moments, turning them into funny, quirky brand moments that show the life of your brand. There is something to that. And for brands who miss the moment, Target sometimes, it's very obvious where a company just sort of like has this personality and they don't.
Also, the moral of the story is more of these brands need to start selling merch, and like they actually have a moment overseas. You know, if ranch threw something on a t-shirt, I mean, what's going to happen?
What's next? Like a Bucky's flagship store on Madison Avenue for the European tourists to come in so they don't have to trek to South Carolina to see the Bucky's?
You know, that might be a thing, Rick. Like you might have something there, a little pop-up. You can get your little Bucky's store merch, your hats.
Bucky's X Prada collab in your future?
Oh, I love it. Now we're talking. Now
you heard it here first.
Yeah, exactly. You heard it here first, and this is the moment. But yeah, look, it also is colliding with America's 250th anniversary. So there's lots of patriotism, I think, that just makes us feel the pride of being American. And it is not the flag. It's not, you know, our monuments and
it's
history.
It's not even the algae, Jess.
It's not even the algae. It is our retail and condiments. So awesome. There you go.
Tax compliance is one of those things that sounds manageable until it isn't. You add a new channel, you expand to a new state, you start shipping internationally. Suddenly, the complexity catches up with you. Tariffs, duties, VAT, jurisdiction rules vary everywhere. And a customer just got hit with an unexpected charge when their order arrived. That's not just a compliance problem. It's a brand experience issue. Avalara is how I solve this for clients. I've been recommending them for years. When we help clients select new providers, Avalara is always the call. Works right inside Shopify, BigCommerce, WooCommerce, wherever your brand lives. Accurate tax at checkout, visibility into tariffs and duties before the order ships, and fewer surprises for your customers. If you're scaling into new channels or new markets, don't let the tax layer slow you down. Check out what Avalara has built specifically for growing brands at avalara.watsonweekly.com. Tell us about our next story.
Here's the next one. So OpenAI is telling Khan, we are an ad platform. They have thrown on their whites. They have hit the beach. And they're essentially with 60 people and one pitch telling folks ChatGPT is an ad platform. And it's kind of a head scratcher, Rick, because if we go in the Wayback Machine, it felt like there was a very intentional, we are not an ad platform.
Boom, boom.
Right. Like the Wayne's World thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We're going back, people.
We are going back. And it's kind of like, actually, no, we didn't say that. The DeLorean was wrong. And now we're reverse engineered. So they have their ads head, Dave Dugan. He came from Meta. And what he's kind of saying is, look, we're seeing super intent. We've got roughly 20% of queries that are carrying direct commercial intent. Rick, let's just kind of break this down. I'm wondering, you know, it's a new platform, lots of people coming and wanting to test it out. Is this going to entirely replace any kind of other type of ad investment, social, Google, whatever?
Yeah, I do think of anyone that seems like it could have a challenge, it might be Google, because at the end of the day, both ChatGPT and Google are intent-driven platforms. What do I mean by that? Is consumer comes generally to the platform with a job to be solved. You don't go on TikTok with a job to be solved. You go to doom scroll and to like be a voyeur, like whatever, just like catch up with your friends, like whatever it is to like be entertained. You don't go to ChatGPT for that. Well, maybe you used to on Sora. They shut that shit down quick.
Yeah, no. No more fun. More fun here.
No more fun. And we're compute constrained, people. Get out of here. But from that point, Meta, it's not something you come there to see. It's something that's there while you're there doing something else.
Right.
And so ChatGPT isn't like that. They claim it's going to be $100 billion ad business by 2030. Frankly, if they keep growing at the rates they do, they're probably right. And so imagine you have this, you know, John Battelle, like way back in the early 2000s, had this sort of database of intentions. He talked about Google as this sort of this intention machine. People pour their soul into Google.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, what do they pour into Google? Keywords.
Yes.
What they're pouring into ChatGPT is conversations. And so the intentionality is so much greater, like from by an order of magnitude point of view. And so if OpenAI can target that, not only does it have more data, who's holding the data, but they also have more targeting data, which means that they can show more relevant ads.
And like you said, the numbers underneath, it's nothing to sniff at. 900 million plus weekly active users. That's up from 800 million last October. You know, we talk about hitting 100 billion. It took Meta 17 years to get there. So like they are just cutting the speed to revenue so fast. I'm curious about like where the guardrails are, if there are any, right?
What word are you using? Well, you define this word guardrails for me, Jess?
Let me just kind of break it down for you. You know, in most ad platforms, there are restrictions. There's like things that you can't, you know, certain categories, there's rules around what you can show to underage customers, like less than 13. So it's, what's the dynamic going to be in this open AI world? Is it like free for all and we just kind of let it like play out and let the things fly and see what happens? Or, you know, do you think they're going to have to rein it in a little bit?
You know, I think OpenAI's trust and safety, where are you at? And we have not seen him, first
of
all.
Is that a department that exists?
Exactly. I don't think it's a department that exists. eBay used to always have, I used to remember Rob, no one's going to get this reference, but Rob Chestnut at eBay was always the head of trust and safety because eBay was this notoriously untrusted platform unless they like put sellers in the penalty box, right?
That's right.
But OpenAI, it's like, oh, we have morals. Anthropic's like, we have morals. And then they're like, you should shut down AI. And Anthropic's like, not our AI. You shouldn't shut down our AI. And then so they're still in the penalty box. OpenAI is more like, oh, you don't want to do a deal with the government. We're going to do it. Pick me. And so they're all in with the Pentagon. I mean, to their credit, capitalism, do what you will. They're going to do whatever is going to make the most money because they have a lot of money to pay back.
They sure do. They're burning cash like no other. It's not just token maxing, it's cash maxing. Right. And they need some cash coming into the door. What else do you feel like is going to be the kind of the headline coming out of it? OpenAI has had some starts and stops as like they tried to do shopping and checkout and like some of those experiments. Do you feel like this one rides out a little bit faster and farther?
Yeah, I mean, this whole space has risen so quickly. You quoted this about 17 years for Meta to hit 100 million users. I just stepped off the stage at Commerce Next a couple of days ago and gave similar stats where it took personal computers something like 23 years to hit 50% of American households. It took the internet something like 17 years to hit 50% of American households. It took generative AI broadly 3 years. So we're just in this strange space where nobody knows what's going on because it's really not possible. We've never seen anything this viral in terms of a usage point of view. And so it's almost like a Rorschach test. Is this a magic potion or elixir? Or is it the devil? It's like everyone is right at this point because it's still evolving and it's just everyone's point of view.
Yeah. And in the meantime, OpenAI seems to be operating on the like break things fast and move versus kind of caring about doing it necessarily, quote unquote, the right way, because maybe the right way hasn't been defined in this world. Kind of can't ignore the lawsuits that are coming at them super quickly. Like you talked about guardrails, there really are none that exist. So will retailers kind of have to go into this cautiously, or they should just kind of throw it at the wind? Doesn't matter.
Throw it in the wind. I mean, you always have some experimental ad budget. That's where this is coming out of. Criteo already has 2,000 advertisers. It's already a decent sized business. They expect to be half of Meta pretty soon. Again, the speed is just breathtaking. So it'll be interesting to see how it continues to evolve, the types of consumers that go here. I think it's pretty obvious. When the head of Meta says that their consumers are super intentional, to me, that's what it means from who do you expect to be there? You're looking, these are the hunters, not the browsers.
That's
and
right.
And so when you're looking to find these hunters, it's going to be a place to be. I think attribution could be a problem for a similar but different way than it is for TikTok Shop. But because of like TikTok Shop, there is a halo effect to Amazon in your D2C site. I expect to see the same thing from ChatGPT because not everyone just sort of like follows a click and then you're going to be able to tag it from here to there. They type something in ChatGPT and then they go on Amazon, totally disconnected. The only one who could track your ass is Apple for that one. But the
close loop.
And then they go to your direct-to-consumer site because, you know, Amazon's blocking you. And so all the things. Attribution is still unsolved, people.
We'll definitely be watching this one really closely, and I'm sure the headlines will continue to pop around the results and what people are experiencing and where the money is going to be flowing.
Exactly. On our next story, we have Shopify Edition Spring 2026. Shopify wants your catalog for its agents. So the tagline is the only platform you need to sell everywhere. Just to catch you up, Shopify does these big releases twice a year, two or three times a year, usually in the spring / summer and in the winter. It's basically a bundle of everything they've done, sometimes in the last year, sometimes it goes back, or sometimes it's also forward-looking. And so, you know, it's not always easy to look at what is released, what's unreleased, what has customers on it, which don't has it, you know, what's in beta, all those things. And so what do you see Shopify doing? First of all, it's putting continued focus on building for agents. That means that developers that are working with Shopify can definitely use things like Sidekick to create things automatically. Third-party apps are now in Sidekick, as we've talked about in the past 6 months, yep. So that you can expose your data to users using Sidekick. You could also drive all the Shopify infrastructure via LLM, so you can do things like automated builds and deploys and building out storefronts, and all those things are now possible. Shopify's also added in agentic user interfaces in the release, meaning you can see the impact of these new LLMs in the UI, like the impact of impressions, the impact of sales. And so you can track sort of like the rise of this agentic economy. Why does this work? I mean, obviously the sales from agents is super small right now, but for Shopify, it's strategic to surface it, you know, maybe even before everyone else can, so that their merchants can see what's happening. And so getting your catalog right seems to be a big focus that they didn't have before. And yes, Now they're continuing to push it.
Absolutely. You talk about the whole agentic first. Mm-hmm. And Shopify has really been beating this drum very hard for a long time. And the pitch of getting your products in front of these AI shopping agents automatically, like, break that down, Rick, what that actually means. And how widespread is kind of the agent shopping environment at this time?
Every major interface from Google, which supports UCP, Shopify, yep, is intended to be like one of the most complete. If you look at Universal Commerce Protocol, which Shopify and Google worked on together, among others, Shopify is an implement, you know, the core of it. It's perhaps in the future that Shopify is just an implementation of this protocol. And so as a result, if agents are the ones transacting, you know, the question is like, where is the center of gravity move in commerce? And it seems to be, if Shopify had these sort of three stools, you know, their app store, the checkout, and the storefront, if the storefront is waning because, yeah, you know, more agents are visiting and less people, which isn't true yet, but
right,
like the future, work with me for a second. We're talking about the future, right?
You. Yeah.
Then where, like, one of the legs of Shopify's stool kind of, you know, gets sawed off, basically. And so what they're doing is trying to build another leg sort of in real time. Where are they moving to? They seem to be moving to the catalog. What are they doing in catalog? They're doing a couple of things. First of all, is they're analyzing your existing catalog to ensure that it has all the attributes that are needed for agents. And so it can let you expand those attributes. Second is it's allowing you to syndicate those attributes to your different agentic platforms. You can turn them on and off, which was a new thing that they released in this area. And then that allows them to basically become this sort of marketing dashboard, almost like sort of like the old channel advisor. And it's all this, yeah, stuff. It's like, it really, it's the same, but different. Like, it's just, right, new platforms, but all the concepts are exactly the same. So especially for the entrepreneur and the SMB, they want to be this sort of one-stop shop for agentic.
So really what you're saying is this puts them more head to head with Amazon. If you look at Shopify, the billions of SKUs collectively they have in aggregate across all of their stores, mm-hmm, and they talk about powering so much of the world's commerce at this point. The only how kind of in parallel is like that in comparison to like an Amazon catalog and what Amazon could be positioning themselves for as kind of like the default shop where an agent goes to look for something to buy. So is Shopify like wanting to aggregate all of this together, which sort of turns them into a marketplace, but not really?
It's a good question, because there was a sneaky screenshot in the release where they released this dashboard and they showed like ChatGPT, Copilot,
yeah,
et cetera. And then like the shop app was next to it. And I'm like, agentic LLM surface and shop app, like, do not belong in the same sentence in, yeah, any imagination you can have. Yet it was there. And so it's either like a sleight of marketing to make you think that this something that's not really agentic is agentic, or it could, in some sense, signal a future direction for the Shop app. Like you said, like, this is going to be our bet for the global catalog. This is where you're going to go get it. And it's going to be backed by Shop Pay, which, in case you hadn't noticed, I see Shop Pay ads like everywhere now.
It's everywhere.
Like, they are taking advantage of, can we say it, you know, the PayPal struggles.
Yes, the PayPal struggle is real. I never thought honestly, you know, PayPal was on such a tear for so long and dominating so much of commerce, and the PayPal button was everywhere. And now it just feels like it's kind of the like redheaded stepchild of the payments at this point, where purple is where the money is.
Purple is the new green.
Purple is the new green, and blue is kind of in the trash bin.
Yeah, it's like the blue struggle bus. You know, I'm sure we can show that somehow.
There's some kind of color wheel parallel thing.
Exactly. We got it.
But, you know, like Shop Pay really being a focus for them. I've seen like ads everywhere, hear them all over podcasts. We used to hear Shopify ads.
Not this podcast. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, but hey, we'll take it. Great place to
talk. We're like Shop Sam Pay. Altman here. We don't discriminate.
That's exactly right. We'll also probably take PayPal, I mean.
Yeah, come on.
So yeah, but it's available on, you know, to any brand on any platform, not just Shopify stores. So it's really kind of that distribution strategy continuing in a major way, where I think Shopify is saying, look, you're going to benefit from having access to Shop Pay because of how widespread it is and how easy it is at this point for people to transact.
I think it's interesting because if the center of gravity for Shopify is moving forward into the catalog, which Shopify never really cared that much about the catalog in the past, like here's a flat file of stuff, they've added meta fields and meta objects and things, and they've made it, you know, marginally more extensible. But Shopify is not a PIM, you know, it doesn't really have a lot of the features that you would have in that kind of solution, but it's, you know, maybe it will evolve more that way. I doubt they'll make acquisitions, because Shopify doesn't tend to acquire things for their core. And then on the back end, if discovery is being disintermediated and Shop Pay is the default checkout because everyone seems to be distracted, then that, I think they see that as a big opportunity. The other thing that is there that has been soundly launched in the last 6 months is Shopify launched an agentic plan, which is basically like Shopify that's not Shopify. What do I mean by that? It's like, it's not a store. It's like, you upload a catalog and then they will push it to the LLMs. Hmm. It's like, you know, the old channel advisor for Shopify, basically.
Marketplace advisor.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's Shopping like, again, it's an old idea. There's a lot of competition in that space, but a lot of people are interested in agentic. And I think for them, it's a test. It was probably very, very simple for them to build. They just got to bypass their storefront. And it could be another, Shopify likes to think the world in terms of these on-ramps.
Yeah.
And so if you're an enterprise coming onto Shopify, you don't want to do a big replatform. Maybe, hey, just use Shop Pay and then add the rest of Shopify later.
Right.
This is sort of this in reverse. Like if you're an entrepreneur or another brand and you have a store that you like, but you're not agentified sufficiently, if that's a word, we just came up with a new word.
That's right.
Then put your catalog in Shopify and we'll send it to the LLMs for you and it'll work with your existing storefront. And by the way, we have the storefront that if you want it later and Shop Pay. So I kind of just think it's sort of like another like hook. Another hook for Shopify to get their sort of like talents into you.
And maybe it's a way because for so long, they didn't cater well to the enterprise because of the need for customization, the need for more of that. Like
what was that word? What was that word you used? Just enterprise?
I thought
it was the rebels.
You talked about this in post this recently. Is it the rebels versus the enterprise? But I do think that that's been, when you talk about them owning the catalog now, they have been disadvantaged because if you had a lot of SKUs, Shopify was not necessarily the best place for you.
Correct.
And so, you know, as a result, they've got a lot of curated, smaller type storefronts, whether those are even entrepreneurs or larger brands. It's not meant for, you know, a traditional marketplace seller that had like hundreds of thousands of SKUs and had a storefront as a secondary to their marketplace storefront on an Amazon or eBay or Walmart or whatever, right? That had not necessarily been Shopify's playground. And now they're wanting to come back and say, oh, wait, no, hold the phone. like we need actually access to more SKUs, more inventory to live out this dream. So I think that it's another way for them to maybe go about getting access to that when for so long they've been giving those types of stores or, you know, commerce companies the Heisman.
Yeah. So Shopify continues to sort of push and build these prototypes and experiments and these things. They, you know, they have a little bit of the case of corporate FOMO, but you could also just call it like they experiment a lot. And I expect you see some of these experiments shut down, you know, over the coming years as we figure out what's working and what's not. So that's the Shopify this week.
That's the Shopify story. What, do they have a lane, Rick?
Shopify, you know, you ever remember that the line at the end of Back to the Future is like, roads, where we're going, we don't need roads.
<That's right. laughs>
It's like, Shopify doesn't pick a lane. They just drive anywhere.
And they can, I guess, right? Yes. At the end of the day, who's their real competition? We've talked about this. Salesforce has like struggled on the commerce side. They recently are trying to bring commerce back. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they tried to bring Fetch back in the Mean Girls, you know, movie. But they, you know, you also have a big commerce and they've really struggled. And so, you know, where does that leave like their competitors? So they don't necessarily have to pick a lane because they can be whatever you need them to be in that moment.
Yeah. Until you have tough competition, it doesn't necessarily force you to make as tough choices. I think Nitin Mangtani coming back to Salesforce is a good step for them. Yeah. They seem to be on an acquisition tear, which, you know, it's 50-50 whether that tends to work out. Like I find that 80% of the time it doesn't work out.
Yeah.
But you need to be able to retain those employees and unify those things, which is about the hardest thing usually corporations ever do. BigCommerce, I really just think they're just chopping wood. They're like, we're in a lane. We're just going to keep going forward. We're not going to do anything crazy, which is probably kind of what they need to keep doing.
You know, Shopify is never one to, I'd say, shy away from being bold, trying new things, testing the waters. And this announcement was like packed full of lots of things to decipher. So thanks for breaking that down and helping out the little guys who are just trying to keep up.
Exactly. No, thanks a lot, Jess. That's it for our show. We are excited that you were able to listen in today. Look for us next week. It's the holiday, but what else are you going to listen to on your holiday weekend?
Exactly. We're a great road trip listen. I'm just going to say, you know, or if you're out there grilling those hot dogs and celebrating America, you know, just pop us in.
Yeah. America.
America. That's right. Well, in closing, stay classy, be bold, and have a great weekend.
See you next time.